Mr. King, Reel 9. This would be towards the end of 1942. Was it from here that you were mobilised to go abroad?
Yeah, this was about the time I remind you. As I say, I can't remember a great deal of training that we did at Cambly. Maybe it's more indoor training than there. But I can't remember any big major schemes that we did at that time. Or just seemed to be preparing, you know, for everybody. I don't think everybody knew that we were going abroad, but certainly I remember when we hadn't been told we'd been mobilised to go abroad, but we'd arranged a dance in Cambly, and the dance was due this one this night. And then suddenly, before we could cancel it, we were given orders to move up to, I think we moved to Liverpool. Anyway, I have vague recollections of having to leave a small party behind just to tell everybody that the dance was off, that we'd gone or were in process of going. And it was all sort of all done very, very quickly, I remember. I sent recall notices out to everybody, in the town and that sort of thing. And it was all done in a desperate hurry, you know, get your kit packed, and all this sort of thing. We'd go out at midnight or whatever, and it was all sort of panic stations at that time, I remember.
Had you been inoculated for?
Oh yes. We had all those. I think people knew that, I think everybody had an idea that it couldn't be long before we went abroad. So I remember we got inspected by the King. We're all drawn up on the parade ground, of course, and the King came around and inspected us. And he was doing up like a bloody shilling dinner, I remember. Because he passed quite close to me.
What do you mean, done up like a shilling dinner?
Well, he was all powdered up, all the makeup. Sent a whole lot of makeup on and that, and he didn't say anything to anybody. He just sort of walked around. That was it, end of story. Wasn't impressive at all, to be honest. I mean, the general crack wasn't that well. His old bloody doors, I think, done up like a shilling dinner. And people didn't seem to be very impressed by the fact that they'd been inspected by the King, A lot of them thought it was all like a complete waste of bloody time anyway, that he'd stood there for hours and he suddenly walked around and that was the end of the story,
Did you feel that the battalion was at its peak, training-wise, at this point in time?
Well, I thought we were reasonably well trained, yes. As I said, I thought I had a really good platoon. And we had a really good company, I think everybody seemed to well together somehow. We had a really good, as I said, a working relationship, I think. With other companies, and I thought that we were reasonably well equipped to go abroad. Yeah.
How did you feel yourself about going abroad?
Well, I don't think that was really one way or the other, to be honest. It was just one of those things you have to accept, I think.
You weren't looking at it as some exciting adventure that you'd never been out of County Durham and here you were?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I was, one way or the other, to be honest. Maybe look forward to, when the time came to get on the boat and that sort of thing, because as you say, I've never been out of County Durham before. So I think, I think maybe looked on it as more as an adventure than anything else. Certainly didn't think we were going out to get shot at and get killed. I don't think that was part of the equation. I think people just looked on it that it was another something that you had to do as a soldier, you know, but I don't think anybody thought that what was to become of them. I don't think anybody saw that, you know. I don't think everybody was just young, weren't they? I mean, after all, how old would I be? I mean, I was just about 22, you know, so at that age you don't worry about what's going to happen, I think.
You said that you moved to Liverpool. What date would this be?
Well, I think it was Christmas Day, Christmas Eve. No, we left Liverpool on Christmas Day.
Had you been given a send off from Cambly? Were the people turning out for you?
No. It was all very hush hush. In fact, as I say, we sort of left without being able to notify anybody. You know that it was all a bit hush hush. At least I thought it was.
Did you get embarkation leave?
I can't recall getting it. Embarkation, maybe we did, but it would be well before, I think it would be maybe in November, you know, back in November that we got embarkation leave. But I don't think we were told it was going to be embarkation leave.
So when you got home, you wouldn't?
No, I don't think anybody knew that they were going on embarkation leave.
But your parents didn't get too worried or upset?
No, I don't think so. I think we just suddenly up stakes and that was it, yeah.
Do you remember the name of the boat that you sailed on?
I think it was the Staffordshire, I think. The Staffordshire.
Were you part of a convoy?
Never could ask me something now. I don't know whether we were, but yeah.
And you hadn't been told where you were going at this point?
No idea.
Had you been issued with tropical kit?
No, I have no idea. I don't think anybody had any idea where we were going. Because you've got the usual rumours that you've seen Arctic cloth being put on board. No, I don't think anybody had any idea that. I remember the passage was, I remember, was seemed to be always, everybody seemed to be always pretty pleased to get up off the mess decks, because the mess decks were sort of remember all these series of tables and the hammocks above. And hammocks on the mess decks, of course. The place was absolutely jammed with troops, you know. There must have been a hell of a lot of troops on board. I don't know how many, mind, but there seemed to be a hell of a lot. And the place seemed to be absolutely chock-a-block with troops. There was no room to move much, you know, to do anything on board on the ship.
You weren't able to exercise in any way?
I recall not doing a great deal of, we used to try and keep them interested in doing a bit work on them, on the LMJ, you know, and that sort of thing. But no, they didn't seem to be, far as I remember rightly, they didn't seem to be a great deal of work done on the boat, actually, you know, except in generally, we used to do physical training on the deck now and again, and but other than that, it seemed to be that we just stood down in the mess decks, to be honest.
That included the sergeants?
Yeah. Oh, there was no separation then. Just everybody used to just need to tell you just where you were, you know, very cool.
The hammocks that obviously you were issued with, when you'd use them, when you slept in them, how did you put them away?
Oh, you rolled them up. No. The ones on the tables were put away. Like stored on the side, but the ones above were left, if I recall rightly. They all weren't stored away. The ones that were hanging, suspended off the top. They were left suspended, I think. But the others, on the decks and on the floor, on the deck and on the tables, they were put away.
It must have been pretty difficult, awkward.
Oh, I thought
almost it, uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was really very uncomfortable there, if I remember rightly. There was no sort of no comfort at all, in fact, you know.
Did that lead?
Very little there.
Did that lead to any problems as the days went by?
No, I don't think so. No, no, I don't think there were any problems in that sense. I think people were just more interesting where the hell they were going there, you know, rather than create any problems.
Did they give you any kind of leisure activities?
Not at all. They used to play tombola, of course, you know, and that was about all, you know, the one or two of the sailors used to do, try the old fake card trick, get it and all that sort of thing. But largely, just used to do tombola, you know, and that was it. That was about the only leisure activity there was. We came when we I think everybody breathed a sigh of relief when we, mind you, smelled British. You brought the miles out to say, oddly enough. We knew we were getting close because you could smell it. It looked brilliant, mine, you know, on the deck. Looked brilliant. All the white houses were bright, you know, you smelled it, you know, miles away.
Was the food better on the ship than what you'd been getting?
It was quite good. The food we thought was quite good. That was the old system again, where you used to send the bloke down to the galleys for the groom. And the first ones there, they'd dish it out if they got the most, you know. Not a very good system of make sure everybody got the whack.
Was there a canteen?
I don't recall a canteen as such, no. I think we got cheap. There's cigarettes, of course. People saying that I've always had plenty of cigarettes. And chocolate, I think, there was seemed to be. No, I can't recall it. No, I can't recall a canteen as such, no.
How long were you on the ship?
I couldn't do it, to be honest. I couldn't tell you.
And obviously, you got to Gibraltar, you knew you were going somewhere warm.
We were going through Gibraltar, I see the lights of Spain, actually. You know, I used to think it was really quite aware when you saw the lights. And
you still didn't know where you were going. You still hadn't been told at this point.
No.
Were you ever told when you were on the boat?
I can't ever recall being told where we were going. To be honest, no. It was just when we were very, very close that we knew that it was Algiers. And we'd been told, I think, on the boat that we were then part of the First Army, But information was very, very, very light in there. We didn't get little information, I think, as anybody ever got. We never got sort of given any real information, no. We weren't sort of brought together and said, look, this is what you're going to do, lads, and this is what, you know, I cannot recall any of that. It was just on a platoon basis, you know, where the platoon officer used to come and say, I think we're going here, or I think we're going there, or we might be going there. But there was no sort of, I don't think there was any sort of broad information came out.
Because Alamein had happened then, and then there was the North African invasion. This must have had an uplifting effect, to at last winning as against losing.
I think everybody, I don't think anybody, there's no sort of defeatism at all. Everybody sort of, I think everybody was really, I'm not saying they were looking forward to but I said, I think they were looking forward to get off the boat. No doubt about that. And of course, we landed in Algiers.
What were your first impressions of North Africa?
Well, as I say, the first impressions we got was the smell. I think that was the initial experience. And then, of course, everything was in such a very bustle, you know. I mean, we'd see so many people, you know, as you appreciate, coming from a sort of a village life almost into a big city like Algiers was at the time. And then seeing all the foreign people, of course, foreigners and Arabs and one thing and another. And I remember we entrained, we went in Algiers, just outside Algiers. I think it was a place called Maison Wong, where we were in there first, in fact. I remember seeing oranges for the first time. We were in this orange grove, like an orange place, a big farmhouse type place. Or with arches, you know, sort of like, you know, I remember. And we were upstairs in this, just like, essentially like a press room where they pressed the great oranges or whatever they did. And I remember seeing the oranges for the first time on trays, you know, on trays. And, but other than that, I think it was just a sense of adventure being in a new place, you know, being in a different.
Well, this would be January 43.
Yeah.
Was it warm?
It wasn't all that warm, man. No, it was comfortably warm. It wasn't. I can't recall having any different battle dress on mine. I think we just had the same battle dress on. Normal issue of battle dress. Didn't get issue with any other battle dress, I think.
And you said you were entrained to this camp.
Yeah, entrained.
As against marching, you didn't march.
No, I think we marched up to this Maison Blanc first, and it was then that we entrained. Yeah. Because I remember the first person I met on the 12th, as it happened, I said to this lad, "We seem to be on this train forever and ever." I think you could have really marched faster than where the train was going. And anyway, the train stopped. And I said to this bloke, go and get me some water, I'll have a share. Anyway, for some reason he couldn't get the water. This engine driver wouldn't give him any really water for him to get a share. I remember going up this engine driver. And I'm trying to talk pigeon really French to him about law and all this work, you know. And he was from Bloody Crook. He was a postman driving the bloody train from Crook. I thought, you know. Couldn't believe it. And Williams, they called him. Can you use for Smith? Anyway, they called him Williams. And he was in the engineers, was the engineers driving the bloody train. I thought, well, I haven't come that far, mate, no good.
Where was the train taking you?
No. I remember Sogaras, I think. I think it was in somewhere in the area of Souk Arras, I think. I would have to delve well into my memory to determine where the hell we were going on the train. But it seemed to be forever and ever, I remember, on this train.
Were you moving up towards the line at this point?
Yes, we were moving up towards the line. Now, I'm almost sure we detrained at a place called Souk Arras. Yeah, I'm almost sure it was there.
You're obviously now approaching the danger zone. Yeah, what are your feelings of that?
There hadn't been any danger until then. You know, we hadn't seen any, the droid had seen any fighting or anything like that. And I remember we took a position on this side of this hill, Green Hill and Ball Hill. I remember Green Hill and Ball Hill were the two names of these big features, these two features. And we were in the, I recall that we were in the tunnel, at least our HQ was in one end of the tunnel, of the railway tunnel. And the German headquarters, as it would appear, was in the other end of the tunnel. And we were on the sort of the rear slopes of this Green Hill and Ball Hill.
Can you tell me where the Germans were in relation to your own positions?
Yeah, we were sort of on the rear slopes of this hill, these two hills. The railway tunnel went under, of course, and the Germans were on the opposite slope. And we used to get a case from, if there was any movement at all during the day, it was more or less a static position, because if there was any much movement during the day, it would be shelled. You know, there's no quite a bit shelling in there. And it most movement was at night, you know, because we used to get all the ammo, and you know, there was ammo and ammunition parties and foot parties and all that sort of thing, mostly at night time. So Brooks weren't getting a lot of rest, actually. You were getting shelled during the day if you made much of a pretty move. And then, of course, nearly all night was taken up either on guard or providing ration parties and ammunition parties. Because I remember that was the first thing we had any to do with mules. You know, they used to bring a lot of stuff up on mules. And it was mostly ammunition parties and sort of digging in and you know, all that sort of thing. You were either digging in, providing ammunition parties, getting shelled, or asleep. That was it, you know.
So you were actually digging in as against.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Strangers or that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. We were dug in company areas, you know.
Did you have any units supporting you, and obviously artillery? And
oh yes, yes. We had mostly howitzers, actually. I don't know what regiments you have the artillery, but. Mostly howitzer guns high angle guns. Of course, I suppose that was because of the terrain, I suppose. You know, logging them over top of the hills, you know.
Tanks?
We're fairly well supported, and fairly closely supported, in fact. Their gun emplacements were quite close to where we were. In fact, you know, we used to play heli, they were shooting a lot, but we used to get what was coming back, you know, but, and then we used to get the 4.2 gun, the 4.2 mortars, you know, the support companies used to come with the 4.2 mortars, and they used to fire what they called a stunk, and then bugger off. And then we used to get the Germans firing back, you know, blokes used to be playing hell about that. Because they used to bash up, dismount, fire about, you know, X amount of rounds off in as quick as they could, and off. And then we were sitting waiting for the mortars coming back, you know. it wasn't very pleasant. But
the German mortars, what were they?
I don't know what calibre they were. Well, they were very, you're just uncanny, you can just hear them go pop, 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 pop. And then you were sitting waiting, knowing that they were on the way. You could hear them actually popping, you know, when they showed them in the barrel, you know, you could hear the report, and then you knew you'd better get up, like that was it.
What effect has shelling and mortaring on you?
where it, I think the lads coped very well, actually. We didn't get a great deal of shelling on mortar. Plenty, mind. Plenty during the day if there's much movement. And particularly if you were in observation areas where you had to move, you know, to get there and back and that sort of thing. You couldn't get there during the day. During the night, maybe you had to crawl up during the day to these forward observation posts. And that's when you've got the shelling mostly. But quite a bit of mortar fire. And as I say, all you can hear was the pop, 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 pop. And you knew that there was some shells, some mortar bombs on the way. Like,
were they pretty accurate?
They were very accurate. The Germans were very, very accurate with the mortar bombs, no doubt about it. They must have been very superior as far as the ranging and the sight setting was concerned, because they seemed to be always on range, you know.
There's so little you can do with shells and mortars coming down on you.
Just hope that you just need to really slip trench where you are, you know.
Did any men crack under that situation, that stress?
No, I can't recall anybody ever doing a runner there at that time, you know. The only time I can recall doing a runner was when we were... I think it was a place called Jebel Abiyad, I'm not sure of mine, but it was around that area. And we were machine gunned by these Messerschmitts, the big yellow boss propellers on them, remember. And they just used to lop over the hill, you know, sort of come straight over the hill. And we got machine gunned and strafed with these, because we were all sort of diving into the bloody ditches and trenches. And he had an area around there, they used to call it Bomb Alley. And they used to hurtle along, the bloody trucks used to absolutely try and hurtle along this bloody road, because they knew that they must have been in sight, of course, of the Germans. And they used to call these bloody stupids up and there, or whatever, Messerschmitts. And they used to, as I said, when we got strafed, on this particular time, I remember that we had about, the only time I ever recall, we had about five blokes did a runner, because I was chasing after them with the officer, yelling at the buggers to come back, but they didn't. I think they found some of them in Algiers, actually. But as I say, that's the only time that I can recall anybody ever really, of course, we should go to panic stations in that sense, like, you know.
Do you recall the name of any of them, or names of any of them?
Well, there was one bloke called Stanway, I remember.
Now, had he given you trouble before?
Well, he was always one of these big bullies. He was a big, dark, good-looking fellow, I suppose. Black hair, lock curly hair. And what he was going to do at the gym, there was nobody's bully, you know, when we were in England. And as it happened, he was one of the first to take off when we were on this, we got strapped, I remember. But I can't recall much about any of the other lads, so, you know. I know there was about five of them there we were missing. About five.
And
was the proportion wasn't so bad, really. You know.
And their running had no effect on the others?
Oh, no. It was just a one-day wonder, I think. You know. In fact, I think they... You know, they thought a bloody sight less of them when they'd gone. You know what I mean?